sports dude, and this is the Hard Count on College Football Podcast. And today, we have a range of topics we're going to talk about, some of the crazy plays that people have made that certain Baylor boosters want to have Art Briles back after a one-year suspension. Another topic we're going to be talking about is one of the most popular things I did on this podcast was a few episodes ago. I did an over-under, and I said, did I think the team was going to go over or under for the season on the wins? And we're going to bring that back today with a few more teams. And lastly, we are going to talk about an article SB Nation posted about getting rid of divisions in the conferences, as well as many few smaller issues. Let's get started. So the first one I want to talk about is that SB Nation article I talked about earlier. And this is honestly, I'm surprised no one's thought of this before. I mean, I'm sure people have thought of it before, but I'm surprised no one's publicized it before, because this has been met with, like, pretty much everyone that's seen this article has really loved this idea. So, for example, in conferences like the SEC and the ACC, 14-team conferences that play 8 games a year, you are going to go, and I'm a Virginia fan, and I go to Virginia football games. So let's take the ACC, for example. I only get to see Clemson play every 12 years at home. Clemson and Virginia play every 6 years, and so a home team would only get to see them play every 12 years. Now, in this plan, that would go down from teams play each other every 6 years to every 2 years, which means three times more often you would play a team. And so this is how it works. So in the SEC, there will be 3 protected rivalries. In the ACC, they'll have 4. So how this will work is just, I don't know why, but I didn't write the article, but so it'll go like this. So let's take Alabama, for example. Every year they will play Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee, which are their 3 main rivals. And other than that, they will rotate throughout the rest of the ACC schedule. You could take Texas A&M. They will play Arkansas, LSU, and Missouri every year. And then that will rotate through the schedule. In the ACC, Clemson would play Florida State, Georgia Tech, Louisville, and NC State every year. In the Big Ten, we would say Ohio State plays Illinois, Michigan, and Penn State every year. Michigan plays Minnesota, Michigan State, and Ohio State every year. Basically, how it works is you take the three teams, or in the ACC's case, 4 teams that you have the biggest rivalries with, and you lock those games in. You will play those games every year. But other than that, all the other teams will be on a rotating schedule. So Virginia will play Virginia Tech every year, but they won't play. So right now, Virginia and Pittsburgh are in the same division. They play every year, and they aren't rivals. And Virginia and Florida State, where there's actually a trophy for that rivalry game, play every 6 years. And this way, we can fix some of that stuff. So I definitely agree with this. Now, the question is if I think this is a real possibility for the future. And honestly, I could see it happening, because teams want to get revenue, and revenue is the main driving force. And rivalry games mean revenue. You're going to have more alumni coming down to see the games. And this would also mean, like, let's say you're a Michigan fan that lives in Iowa or something like that. So normally you'd only get to see those two teams play like every 5-6 years, but this they would play every 2 years. So that way you could see, if you're living near a different school campus than the one you'd like, you'd be able to go see their team more often, and this would definitely drive up sales for tickets. So I could see this happening, not soon and not likely at all, but I feel like it's possible. It's definitely not likely, but it's possible. And I do think this article has gotten enough buzz that conferences have seen it, and they'll probably consider it in the coming years. Like I said, I doubt it will actually go into effect, but it's a cool idea, and I wanted to give let you guys know that it exists. I would suggest going to that website and seeing who your favorite team's rivals matched up with are, and just seeing if you agree with the idea or not. So, now on to our next topic. So, next up, I'm going to be giving you guys a little look at my SEC West predictions for this year. And these are not final predictions. My actual predictions articles will be coming out. First one's probably going to start coming out in July. I would say that'll run all the way up to pretty much the beginning of the college football season. We're going to have 30 solid articles probably on that college football topic. By far, the biggest preview I've ever done. It's my most viewed stuff every year, so I decided to expand a lot on it. But for those of you that are sitting down and listening to the podcast, I figured to give you a little look into what I think in college football's best division, which is the SEC West. So a lot of people have Alabama as their preseason number one. I understand that. But Alabama is possibly the most talented team in the country. In fact, I think in my way too early top 25, I had them ranked first, if not second. Let me check one sec. Yeah, I had them ranked number one. So I do think they're the best team in the country, but their schedule says something different. So in the SEC, there are five powerful teams. They're the five best teams in the SEC. The powerhouses. You got Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Georgia. Alabama plays three of the four other teams, and they play all of those three on the road. And I see best case scenario, Alabama wins one of those three games. Best case scenario. So I don't think Alabama is going to win the SEC West. In fact, I don't think they're going to come in second. I think LSU coming first, Ole Miss second, and Alabama third. That big LSU-Ole Miss game in Baton Rouge, Death Valley, will end up deciding the SEC. And I think LSU will win that game. I feel like they're just a little bit more talented. Ole Miss lost a lot in the draft this year. Not as great on the defensive line. LSU's been beefing up over the past few years. They've kind of silently been going from national powerhouse, and then they kind of dipped to a good team, but not a powerhouse. Now they're kind of climbing back up again. Quietly, Les Miles almost got fired last year, and now I think they are going to be a college football playoff contender this year. So that's my quick prediction for the SEC West. Of course, subject to change, but for now, Alabama third, Ole Miss second, LSU winning the SEC West. And also, this is a good time to just touch on something someone asked me a few days ago. They asked, hey, do you think this Ole Miss scandal is going to have any effect on them? Because they kind of went from a nobody to a national powerhouse really quickly. No, I don't. They got, I think it was something like 11 scholarships over the next 3 years, something in that range. It might have been, it was low double digits over the next 3 or 4 years. And that's not bad. I don't see them, unless they get a postseason ban or something, because of the Robert Kimnichi draft night thing. Or Laramie Tunsil, sorry, I'm getting it all messed up. But unless they get like a postseason ban or something else that would warn a lot of recruits to decommit or not commit in the first place, I feel like they're going to become a national powerhouse. I think they'll make a New Year's Six Bowl this year. Maybe the Peach Bowl. Actually, that's a college football playoff game this year. Oops. But I think they'll make a New Year's Six Bowl this year. I think they will be pretty good for years to come. So now we've got some scheduling things. This starts, first off, Texas and Texas A&M. Ever since Texas A&M left to join the SEC, there was this whole, will they play, will they not play? They almost played in March Madness. Early in September, Texas A&M regent said something like, here, I pulled up the quote. It says, I'm going to advocate that the Aggies play Texas again in the near future. Because of our brutal SEC West schedule, the Aggies need some cupcake games to rest and heal. And in my view, Texas is just as weak, if not weaker, than the non-conference games we play. So we may as well play them. So that was kind of a joking thing. No one really thought it was going to be taken seriously. But then there was this. About a week ago, June 10th, this was 6 days before when I'm recording this podcast, Charlie Strong says they're trying to work something out right now where we're going to play the Aggies. Charlie Strong, of course, Texas head coach. And if Texas and Texas A&M play again, I feel like that'd be a great thing. The rivalry is huge. It used to be played every year on Thanksgiving. And I'm fantastically excited for this game. But I might even be more excited for another rivalry that's been rumored to come back, Michigan and Notre Dame. Both Notre Dame's head coach and Michigan's head coach, Jim Harbaugh, have said they want to play each other, and I think they both have an open date in 2018. So come on, book it. Michigan's AD that was really against it is no longer there. He said it would be a long time before the schools played again, but he's out, and they both agree. So just schedule it. 2018, the college football world wants to see it. But now we've got something that is interesting, to say the least. So, Boston College and Stanford. Not a typical rivalry game, but they scheduled right now. It's 2 long months until college football season starts. I can barely wait that long. 2 months! But how about 12 to 13 years? Because Boston College and Stanford scheduled a series so that in 2028, Boston College will play Stanford on the road, and in 2028, Stanford will travel to Boston College to play Boston College. And in 2029, Boston College will travel to Stanford to play. They're scheduling 13 years in advance. September 15th, 2029 is the date. I've already booked my ticket, guys. The countdown clock is going. But all jokes aside, we have no idea when the state of college football is going to be 13 years from now. I don't think you should be scheduling 5 years in advance, let alone 13. So, not a fan of these long-term announcements. So, I don't know. It's going to happen. Teams wanting lockdown schedules out of the college football playoff is happening. Boston College, I guess, is hoping they're going to be good 13 years from now after not winning an ACC game. Because they want to get that big win against Stanford onto the way to the 48-team college football playoff. Anyway, next up, we've got our over-under game. So, stay excited. Okay, so here we go. Let's do our over-under win totals. The first team that was nominated was the Nebraska Cornhuskers, who, according to CBS Sports, their over-under for the season is 8.5. So, here we go. Nebraska, Fresno State, Wyoming. Those look like two games that they'll win. Oregon at home. That's a toss-up. We'll count that up as toss-up. Northwestern on the road, a tricky game. Northwestern on the road is always tough. But I think they'll be able to pull it off. Illinois, Indiana, Purdue. That's a four-game winning stretch. So now we're at 6-0. Wisconsin and Ohio State, both on the road, back-to-back. Looks like two losses. So let's call it 7-2. Let's say they beat Oregon at home, because this isn't going to be a good year for Oregon football. So, yeah, I think there's a good chance that Nebraska beats Oregon at home. And then let's say they beat Minnesota, beat Maryland, finish it off with a loss at Iowa. So they'll probably lose Wisconsin, Ohio State back-to-back, and then Iowa also, with Oregon and Northwestern being two games they could lose. I'd set them at 9-3 right now, maybe 8-4. If they can get through Oregon at home and then at Northwestern unscathed, Oregon is going to be a big game, and the Northwestern's game, I think, upsets a possibility. At the end of the day, yeah, I'll say 9-3, which is over 8.5, so I'm going to actually take the over on Nebraska winning 8.5 games. Now, next up, we stay in the Big Ten with Wisconsin, who's over-under for the year, I understand, is about 7, which is perfect, because Let's see. LSU's a loss on a neutral field. It's in Wisconsin, but it's technically on a neutral field. But like I said earlier in the podcast, LSU's a college football playoff contender. That's a loss. Akron and Georgia State back-to-back, two wins. But then, that's it. Wow. At Michigan State, at Michigan, Ohio State at home, at Iowa. There's a good chance they go 0-4 there. There's a real good chance they go 0-4. Start the season off 2-5. But after that, the schedule looks pretty good. Nebraska at home. I think they'll win that game. At Northwestern, like I said, it's always a tricky game, but I think they'll be able to get it done just barely. Illinois at Purdue, Minnesota look good. So I think they'll go 7-5, exactly on the over-under margin. But like I said, I think they'll start off the season 2-5 and then end up winning their last five games. And, you know, 7-5 for the year. Now we'll move to the ACC with Miami, who's at 6-5 over-under for the year. Let's see. Florida A&M, Florida Atlantic, at Appalachian State. Three wins off the bat. Then we've got at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech in general is always a tough game. They're always sneaky. They're option attack. You kind of never know. They can have a great game and just completely surprise you like they did Florida State last year. But I'd say they win that game tentatively. Then Florida State at home. It is at home, but Florida State's one of those teams that's kind of getting lost in the shuffle this year because Clemson was so good. But Florida State's a national title contender, and I think they beat Miami on the road. North Carolina at home, that's a win. But then they go at Virginia Tech, and I think they'll lose that game. So right now we're sitting at about 5-2. And what was the over-under? The over-under was 6.5. At Notre Dame, that's another loss, 5-3. And then Pitt, Virginia, NC State, and Duke to finish off the year, they could very well go 4-0 in those games, 9-3. I'm taking the over on Miami at 6.5 because I think that they could go 9-3. I think they could go 9-3. And I'm not a Miami fan necessarily, but I think this is something where I would definitely take the over here. Sorry, I say worst case scenario, they lose to Georgia Tech. And maybe, I don't know. I don't know. Worst case scenario, I feel is 7-5, which is still over. Worst case scenario, 7-5. They could beat Florida State at home. They could beat Virginia Tech on the road. Those are winnable games. This team could go double-digit wins this year. I know they have a first-year coach and everything, but I do think 9-3, worst case 7-5. So, definitely taking the over on 6.5. And lastly, the Florida Gators. Oh, the Florida Gators. The over-under for them this year is looking at... I passed it. Florida at 7.5. Okay. So, starting off with UMass, Kentucky, and North Texas all at home. 3-0 for sure there. They've got the big winning streak against Kentucky and then UMass, North Texas. North Texas is one of the worst teams in college football, as is UMass. They're probably both in the 120s, and there's 128 teams. So I say they get two wins there. At Tennessee, no, they're not going to win that. At Vanderbilt, that's a tough one, but I'll say they win 4-1. LSU at home, no, 4-2. Missouri at home, They should win that game. It's homecoming. Missouri's kind of iffy. So I think they'll make a bowl. Maybe. They're like on the cusp, 5-7, 6-6 probably. But I think they'll win that game at home. So that'll put them at 5-2 to start the year. Then they've got the world's largest outdoor cocktail party against Georgia. Like I said, Georgia is one of the top teams in the SEC. I see them losing that game. At Arkansas, they'll probably won't win that game either. Arkansas is a sneaky good team, as always. They are. Like the past 2 years, Arkansas has been sneaky good. plus top 25 team, but on the road, I do think they will beat Florida. So that's dropping them to 5-4, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep, 5-4. South Carolina and Presbyterian look like 2 wins. That gets them to 7-4. That gets them to 7-4. The over-under was 7.5. Their last game at Florida State, they're not going to win that. 7-5 for Florida, I say. So, just to recap, I say Nebraska at over 8.5, I think it was. And then Wisconsin, push 7 wins. Miami, way over 6.5. And lastly, Florida, under 7.5. So, pretty good mix there. Now, let's go into the next topic. So, Ohio State added another top prospect to their already incredible recruiting class for 2017. They added the nation's number one dual threat quarterback, Tate Martell. Sorry. Butchered that. But he has been on the radar of teams since 8th grade. This is the 4th school he's committed to. He decommitted. I think he committed to Washington. Decommitted there. Committed somewhere else. Decommitted. Committed to Texas A&M. Decommitted there. And finally has agreed to go to Ohio State. Now, nothing's to say that he might change his mind again and go to a 5th school before February National Signing Day. But for now, it looks like he's going to Ohio State. He was an Elite 11 finalist, and now he's going to Ohio State. He's a 4-star recruit, according to the top recruiting site, and he is number one dual threat. So, obviously, a big pickup for Ohio State, but they were going to be the number one recruiting class for 2017, with or without him. He's a big recruit, and I figured I should mention that he has changed from Texas A&M, and now he's going to Ohio State. And so, here we go. It's kind of a surprise decision, actually. His final schools were California, USC, UCLA, Colorado, and Ohio State. It might be like, one of those things is not like the other. Like, Ohio State's the only team there that's not a Pac-12 team, so he figured they were the odd one out. He was going to go with a Pac-12 team. There's a 4 out of 5 chance he was going to pick a Pac-12 team. So Ohio State was kind of there just to make it a 5, so it's a kind of a round number. So it wasn't a surprise decision, at least to me. I don't know about other people that have more recruiting knowledge than me, probably. But he did choose Ohio State. That's good news for the Buckeyes. Not good news for the rest of the Big Ten for 2017. So on Friday, Baylor took the next step towards implementing Pepper Hamilton's reports. They had 100-plus recommendations to limit sexual assault at Baylor. And then 3 days later, they were making headlines again, for the wrong reasons. So Baylor's Board of Regents is considering a 1-year suspension of Art Briles and are considering bringing him back after this year. And now, if you read the headline, not the headlines, the headlines were like, Art Briles fired! When you read into it, he was suspended with intent to terminate. So he has not been fired yet. He might have by this point, but he is apparently some key Baylor donors have said that he might return. And here's a tweet, some tweets. Bob Simpson, a key Baylor donor, says, when someone asked him if he was going to return, he says, "We don't know yet. We'd like to see that." And the former Baylor board chairman told the Waco Tribune that Briles certainly deserves to be reinstated, which is completely insane to me. Like, that all of this horrific stuff that was outlined in the Pepper Hamilton report, and they're considering bringing him back after a 1-year suspension. Like, I know this is probably because there's all this stuff, like, they have an interim AD, an interim president, an interim football coach, and they don't really know what to do, I guess. But this is absolutely insane. Hopefully cooler heads prevail. And that, I guess, like I said, hopefully cooler heads prevail. And this does not happen, and they go on to a new coaching search. for this year. So, guys, thanks for watching. Like I said, Art Briles should not be rehired. Lots of people just care more about football than the safety of their students, which is absolutely awful. It just makes money, and safety doesn't make money. So, gotta prioritize the football program. But hopefully that this does not pass, and Art Briles is out of Baylor coaching. So, guys, thanks for watching. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, at CrazySportDude. It's like Crazy Sports Dude without the S, because someone already took that. And read all my website articles, CrazySports.com. We're going to have one coming out later today, outlining my predictions for the Copa Americano quarterfinals and the rest of the knockout stage. So, thanks for watching, and goodbye. Guys, I haven't done this yet. This is the fifth episode of my podcast, but I'm actually coming back on after I turned it off because a news story, like, literally just broke as I was about to upload this. So now I'm going to have to wait for it to process again for another few hours, but it'll be worth it because this is a huge story. Former Baylor head coach Art Briles filed a lawsuit Thursday saying that Baylor did not rightfully fire him or something like that. Like I said, the story just broke. So here's an article from ESPN. Sorry I couldn't go get my own sources, but this literally just broke. So it says, okay. Former head coach Art Briles, in an emergency motion filed Thursday, is accusing Baylor football of unfairly blaming him and the football program for the school's overall institutional failure in addressing sexual assault. Here we go. A letter included with the motion filed Thursday says that Briles does not want to settle the case and implies that the school is using Briles as a scapegoat in the ongoing Title IX and sexual assault controversy. Here's a quote. The conclusion is inescapable that the motive of Baylor University and the Board of Regents was to use the head football coach and the Baylor Athletic Department as camouflage to disguise and distract from its own institutional failure to comply with Title IX and other federal civil rights laws. It also says it is equally clear from the action of Baylor University and the Board of Regents, both in the media and in its oral and written communications with Coach Briles since the wrongful termination, that they have ignored and repeatedly violated the clear duties that they owe under Texas law and by contract to Art Briles. Wow. If there's a settlement, Art Briles will not be paying anything because it does not owe anything. I don't want to make it look like Art Briles is going to settle or pay because he doesn't owe anything. Oh, so wow, this, okay, my first, like, real hot take that I get to do on this podcast. If it's true that Art Briles didn't know about this, which is highly unlikely to me, then, of course, I hope that he gets to come back as coach. But he knew. In the Pepper Hamilton report, it said he knew. And this just seems to be, he wants to be in the spotlight, he wants to get attention, he wants to try and, he's saying Baylor using him as a scapegoat, but he's trying to use Baylor as a scapegoat and try and save his own skin and try and get a new head coaching job in the future. And I don't know, we don't know the facts here, the story just broke, it's gonna be months before we get any more progress on a ruling, but there he is again, Yahoo Sports. Art Briles accuses Baylor of wrongful termination. Won't settle suit over sexual assault scandal. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen here. But if he's doing these for the wrong reasons, and by first take, it looks like he is, that's wrong. But if he had nothing to know about it... Oh my god, my phone's going crazy with these alerts. Sorry. This is a big story right now. And next week, I'll definitely have some updates for you guys on this. It's kind of crazy that he's suing Baylor for firing him for being knowledgeable. You think it would be the other way around. But who knows? We'll see more of the story as it develops. Thanks for listening, guys. I already plugged my Twitter and my website, and articles coming out later today. So this is going to cap the podcast.